About 5 years ago, there were a couple of towns in Alaska. These were smaller towns, and up until then, they did not allow alcohol sales. Well, then both these towns voted to start allowing alcohol sales. Within 6 months, the town, both of them, decided to repeal the law and go back to being dry. Here's some of the things that happened just in that six-month period. Some workers showed up late, skipped their jobs, school attendance slipped. These are from the words of the mayor of one of the towns. Students were kept up late by partying parents. They were exhausted from taking care of younger siblings. Some parents were drinking up the family's food budgets. Some teenagers went to community functions drunk. Two police officers were fired for drinking on the job. And that's just a few. Now, that happened within a short six-month time period. Those towns thought it'd be a good idea, for whatever reason, to start allowing alcohol sales within the city limits. And within 6 months, they had to repeal the law because of what had happened. The title of the article in the newspaper that reported it was called "Village Sobers Up After Short-Lived Liquor Sales." Now think about that. Within 6 months, all of that changed. All of it changed within 6 months. Well, you probably have an idea about what our lesson is going to be about tonight from Proverbs. The writer of Proverbs has a lot to say about living a wise and righteous life. And in the book of Proverbs, the writer talks a great deal, of course, about wine, about alcohol. I want us to start by looking at Proverbs 23. This is a somewhat lengthy read, but the writer addresses drinking in some length. Proverbs 23, and we'll begin in verse 29. Proverbs 23 and verse 29. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it's red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things, and your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or like one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, "They have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake, that I may seek another drink?" Now, when you look at that, and we're going to look at each of those verses, but when you look at the overall picture, you obviously see here an individual who is not having a good time. He has pain, sorrows. It affects his body. It affects his mind. It affects others. When you look at what alcohol does, period, in any form and in any amount, the amount is not what's important, because any amount is being addressed here. He even talks about just looking at it. We shouldn't even be looking at it, being around it. We need to get as far from it as possible. Notice some of the things he talks about. It causes contentions, it causes complaints, it causes wounds without cause. It causes redness of eyes. You know, these aren't just people who are drunk, notice. Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of mixed wine. See, those are people who are just going in search of it. What does it do? Oh, leads to fights, leads to quarrels. And, of course, we'll look in a minute at some of the statistics from the Center for Disease Control about how often it's involved in different types of accidents and so forth. And, of course, it obviously leads to murder. It leads to diseases. It leads to poverty. On and on and on the list goes. It leads to disgrace. It leads to ruin. How many people have been ruined by alcohol? Well, the numbers are enormous. And yet some, regretfully, even in the church, continue to say it's fine. Continue to say it's okay. Continue to say a drink here or there is not a big deal. Not important. And yet that's not what the writer of Proverbs is leading us to believe at all. One keeps on drinking. See, they linger long. They keep going in search of mixed wine. They just keep on drinking. Notice Proverbs 26, verse 11. The proverb writer tells us, "As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly." Repeats it. Very few people stop drinking. They just continue to do it. And over and over and over. It's rare that you find one that ever stops. He says it's dangerous to continue to go lingering at it, going in search of it. It's a dangerous thing to do. And it's not just the psalmist that talks about this. In Isaiah chapter 5, Isaiah talks about the same thing. Isaiah chapter 5, verse 11. Gives a great warning to people about, again, searching for that drink. He's not warning just to get about getting drunk. He's talking about just going after a drink. Verse 11, "Woe to those who rise early in the morning that they may follow intoxicating drink." See, this is one who starts in the morning. "And they continue until night, till wine inflames them." That's what happens. They continue drinking, and it goes on and on and on until it finally inflames them. Wine can be attractive, can it? That's what he says in verse 31. He says, "Do not look on the wine when it's red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly." I wonder who made wine attractive. Well, you know who made it attractive. It was Satan. He wants it to look attractive. I still keep waiting for one of the companies that advertise wine to show some guy in the gutter filled with, you know, he's been drinking, he's got a bottle there, and he's laying there, and he's been throwing up, and I don't see those commercials like that for alcohol. Why not? Because that's not very attractive. How many people would start drinking if those were the commercials you saw on TV? Probably not too many. That's not what you see. It's always attractive. You never see, you know, latter stage kidney diseases advertised with those companies. You don't see any of those alcohol-related diseases, liver diseases and everything else. You don't see those advertised because Satan makes it attractive. So what is he told? What are we told to do in verse 31? Don't look on it. Don't look on it. Because Satan wants you to be enticed by it. Look at all the rich people. Look at all the famous people that drink. I'm thankful for those who don't. Because that's what Satan wants us to do. He wants us to look on it and see how attractive it is, so it entices. But sin's always attractive. That's what Satan does, right? James chapter 1 talks about how sin is alluring. It entices us. It's attractive. Well, so same with drinking wine, drinking alcohol. In verse 32, it says, "It bites like a serpent and stings like a viper." It's poisonous, in other words. That's what those are. Vipers, serpents are poisonous. He says that's what wine, that's what alcohol is poisonous. And, of course, that's what alcohol does today. It poisons people. Sometimes it's done slowly, sometimes it's done quickly, but it is a poison. It poisons people. Why members of the church would ever justify poisoning themselves is beyond my comprehension. But yet many of them do that very thing. What else does it do? He says, your eyes will see strange things. Your heart will utter perverse things. You know, that's what alcohol does. When you, if you take an MRI of someone, a live MRI, which they do nowadays, and someone that drinks, it's those portions of the brain that deal with judgment that are first affected by alcohol. And so it takes away some of our judgment. No, not when you get drunk, just drinking. Any amount starts to take away some of that judgment, that clear thinking, that logical thinking. It takes that away so that you can't reason as clearly anymore. And that's been proved. And it begins with the very first drink. It impairs decisions. And it always has. In Isaiah chapter 28, another place where Isaiah talks about this, Isaiah 28 verse 7, Isaiah says, but they also have erred through wine and through intoxicating drink are out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through intoxicating drink. They are swallowed up by wine. They are out of the way through intoxicating drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. See what it says? God says it causes you to fall in judgment. That's what alcohol does. It impairs your reasoning ability, your ability to think clearly. That's why so many people who drink make poor decisions. Because that's what it does. Medically, that's what alcohol does. But that's why some people want to do it, of course, in the first place. So that those inhibitions, at least to some degree, are removed. Just think about all the crimes and all the accidents that happen because of this. This is from the Center for Disease Control. This was in 2005, 16,885 people in the United States died in alcohol-related motor vehicle crashes. Almost 17,000 because somebody was drinking. 17,000. And that's almost 40% of all traffic-related deaths. Nearly 1.4 million drivers were arrested for driving under the influence of alcohol or narcotics. More than half of the 414 child passengers ages 14 and younger who died in alcohol-related crashes during 2005 were riding with a drinking driver. 48 children 14 years and younger were killed as pedestrians or cyclists by drivers who were drinking. 16% of drivers ages 16 to 20 who died in motor vehicle crashes had been drinking. Young men ages 18 to 20 reported driving while impaired more than any other age group. Among motorcycle drivers killed in fatal crashes, 30% had blood alcohol levels above the legal limit. Well, on and on, I could just continue with those. But you see what alcohol does. It impairs your judgment. You don't react as quickly. You don't react as well. You can't make as good of decisions. So medically, that's what alcohol does to your brain. It does those things regardless of how much you drink. It dulls our conscience. He talks about your eyes seeing strange things, your heart uttering perverse things. People will say things while drinking they would never even consider saying while they were sober. And that isn't anything new. That's been around for a very long time. In verses 34 and 35, talks about how alcohol will influence you to do a lot of foolish things, dangerous things, like the one who lies down in the midst of the sea or climbs to the top of the mast. But the problem is, what? Those who've been drinking will say, they've struck me, but I was not hurt. Why do so many people drink? Because it dulls the pain. That's why people want to drink, so many of them. And that's what it does. But that's a dangerous thing. Becoming insensitive to pain is very, very dangerous. And sometimes you'll think you can do things that when you were sober, you would never think about doing. You knew that you couldn't do it. But under influence of alcohol, you go right ahead and do it anyway. And then as he finishes there in 35, he says, "When shall I awake that I may seek another drink?" And that's what happens over and over and over again. Well, we certainly know that that's not just an Old Testament problem. In Galatians chapter 5, we're warned about the same thing. In Galatians chapter 5, when Paul wrote to those Christians in verse 19, he talks about the works of the flesh. He says, "Adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, selfish ambitions, dissensions, heresies, envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like." And the like. How many of those things did the Proverbs writer say were caused by wine? Outbursts of wrath, hatred, contentions, jealousies, murders. So many things are caused by alcohol. It's sad. Ephesians chapter 5, the very next book. Paul again, in a similar vein. Chapter 5, verse 18, Paul writes, "And do not be drunk with wine, in which is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit." And it's sad that so many Christians will say, "Well, as long as you're not drunk." Well, if you go look at what the Greek word says, it means softened by. Do not be softened by wine. That doesn't mean you're roll over in the ditch drunk. That's not what the word means at all. It means you're softened by wine. It says, do not be softened by wine, in which is dissipation. What happens? Again, you start doing things while you're under that influence, regardless of how much you've had, that causes you to make bad decisions. Paul says, instead of doing that, be filled with the Spirit. Notice the difference he makes between the two. He says, Christians, don't be filled with wine. Don't go that route. Be filled with the Spirit instead. That's what you need to be filled with. That's what's important. When you look at Vine's Expository Dictionary, when it looks at these words, he mentions the fact that drunkenness is a process. And it's not a state. It's a process. A process that Christians are never to even start on. So instead of starting this process of being filled with wine, instead of start the process of being filled with the Spirit. One leads to a loss of self-control, dissipation. See, that process of being filled with wine, that leads to a loss of self-control. Being filled with the Spirit leads to self-control. That's what Christians need. They need to be self-controlled. Because when you're self-controlled, you have a good sense of right and wrong. When you've been drinking, you don't. As I mentioned, it leads to that poor choice. You don't see things clearly. So while you were sober, you could understand very clearly, well, this is right and this is wrong. But alcohol impairs that ability to distinguish between those two things. In 1 Peter chapter 4, another place in the Bible that talks about this subject in the New Testament anyway. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 3, Peter writes, "For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries." And notice there are several things there that talk about drinking. Drinking parties back in the first century would be kind of what we call social drinking today, but all drinking today is basically social drinking. I mean, regardless of how much you've been drinking, it's social drinking. So there's drunkenness, there's revelries, and there's drinking parties. That's all the degrees of drinking are represented in that verse, regardless of how much you've had. So it even condemns the very beginning of drinking. In Romans chapter 13, verse 3, when Paul wrote to the church at Rome. He says, let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy. Properly, decently. Why does he mention that? Because drinking, like in revelry and drunkenness, throws off those inhibitions. So it's harder for you to act decently and act properly. And finally, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 will be our last verse. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 6 and 7. Paul writes, and this is the one, maybe more than any, which should really cause us to think about ever drinking any. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 6 and 7. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. What's he telling us there? What's the warning there? Drinking hinders us from being watchful. What's the context there? The second coming of Christ. Drinking keeps you from being ready for that event. Drinking lulls you into sleep, as he calls it. Drinking takes away that idea of being sober and watchful. And so again, it takes away that clear thinking, that logical thinking. It leads you to do a multitude of other sins. Think about all the sins that are associated with drinking. I mean, the list goes on and on and on of different ones. So he says here, you need to be watchful and you need to be sober, which means you need to have all your faculties about you. You need to have that clear thinking. You need to have that self-control. All of those are hindered by drinking. Not just by being drunk, but by drinking. All of those things hinder that. So if you are drinking, you're not going to be as aware of what's going on. No wonder so many people, young and old alike, get into trouble when they're drinking because they're not as aware of what's going on. See, it attacks those parts of your brain that destroys your ability to judge well, to discern right and wrong. And so it takes that away. And so Christians should never be around it in the sense of looking to see if it's attractive. Is this something I want to do? Christians should know it's nothing they should ever, ever even begin to do, regardless of the company they're in, regardless of where they're at, regardless of what they are doing, because it leads to so many other sins. So by never starting, we won't ever have to worry about stopping. And that's the warning that Solomon gives us in Proverbs. It says, look at the people who drink. Look at all their problems. Look at all their sorrows, their strife, their worries. Look at all the problems they have, both mentally and physically. Look at all of that. Solomon says, look at all of their problems. And it all stems from drinking, from alcohol, from wine. And of course, wine was the main thing they had back then, so that was the term they used. But any of it leads to those type of problems. Fights, jealousies, and eventually sometimes even to murder. So we're to be watchful, we're to be careful, we're to be sober. So we need to stay away from anything that impairs our judgment. Yes, the Bible is very specific about that. The child of God, the one who's been immersed in water for the forgiveness of their sins, should always stay away from it in every way, shape, and form. Well, the invitation is yours tonight. If you need to respond, I encourage you to come as David leads us in this song.